Good evening. Welcome to the Celerity Report. Today is February 13th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day, and Monday is President's Day. I hope both holidays are filled with joy and time for you. Our theme tonight is moving towards integration. For many years, we've discussed on the Celerity Report how the economy is not going to collapse, but instead it's going to slow burn through. One of the struggles that many subscribers have in trying to understand the slow burn is to do so you need to understand the mechanisms, particularly on the covert side, whether it's the black budget or surveillance or covert operations that are used to manage and manipulate both individual people and communities and the whole cash flow. Those are topics you struggle with unless you've learned the different pieces that we cover here, whether it's the UFOs, as we'll be talking about with Richard Dolan next week, the Nazi or other sort of network lines that we've been talking about with Dr. Farrell. We talk a lot. We did a great Celerity report on the pedophilia scandals and how they relate to control files. These are all different pieces that you need to help you understand sort of the mechanisms of political and financial control. There's no doubt the NSA revelations have made it easier. There was a great story by Steve Levy that was published in Wired in January. I posted a link in Top Picks this week. It's called How the NSA Almost Killed the Internet. I think the title is inappropriate. But what it does do is it helps you understand the cluelessness of many of the people working in the companies that are implementing these kinds of controls. So you have a whole world of very sophisticated, well-paid technologists who have no idea that basically they're building a front for the dark fiber that a variety of mechanisms are basically plugging into what they're doing. It's very interesting, and you start to see the shock that has gone through those different companies as cultures as people begin to realize what they're a part of. It inspired me to write a commentary this week called The Era We Fight Back. We posted the banner for The Day We Fight Back, which is an effort by a variety of groups, including the Electronic Freedom Foundation, which I'm a member of and admirer of. And I did it with some trepidation because the whole idea is to rein in the NSA's powers. And again, I wanted to stress that the NSA is far from the biggest problem here. The question you always have to ask when you intervene in a system to weaken one player is, who are the players who will get stronger? And does that really make the system better? Or could you end up with something much worse? And I think the idea of privatizing the police state is a much more frightening thing than having it balanced with the NSA. So take a look at that commentary if you're interested. This is one of the reasons I wanted to do the conversation we just had with Farrell about the real meta structure of power and the different fronts and how they work through different fronts. And then when everybody gets frustrated with what's happened, you kill the front and all the power recedes back into the metastructure just to pop out someplace else. And my fear is that when you tie the hands of the NSA, if anything, you're just going to make the metastructure and the private parts of that they're arranging to front for them even more powerful. I've talked with Rappaport. I talk more about this. And I talked with Franklin Sanders in the interview that we posted today, that we're literally looking in North America at a Holocaust model, not unlike what the Nazis did. It's just a free-range version. And it's, frankly, it's a much more profitable version. But it has a very similar effect. It was a great interview with Richard. I don't want to give too much away. I'll leave it to next week. But again, Richard's book is the best. His new book, 21st UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, is the best single effort I've seen to bring coherence to this topic and to understand the power of the technology which is implementing these kinds of financial and political control. You really need to look at the UFO phenomena. I won't say understand, because so far the UFO phenomena has really eluded anything close to a complete understanding. But you certainly can frame the topic and understand what can be understood. But as I said on the Solari Report and in the world, we're moving towards integration as these pieces that are necessary to understand the slow burn and what we're dealing with become more sort of more understandable to many of us. It takes time to integrate these questions. I got a great question from one subscriber about how to understand what I'm calling the breakaway economy, inspired by my discussion in the wrap up. So I've decided I'm going to do a 2-part series starting at the end of this month on the breakaway economy, part 1 and part 2. So I'm hoping that will help you with the integration process. Money and markets. Weird weather is the top story this week. Continued cold throughout North America. Floods in the UK. Earthquakes in China. The seriousness of the California drought is really coming to the fore, with communities with only 60 days of water supply contemplating even the possibility of running out of water entirely. I was inspired to write another commentary as the Church of England announced that they're pulling their endowment investments from companies that do not play ball on climate change. Exactly what the specifics of that are, it's not clear. That announcement came at the same time that Lloyd's of London announced it's developing a new model to predict weather to help insurers manage their risk from bad weather. I suspect there is a connection, because certainly weather is having a very significant economic impact. But what this all brings to the fore is many of us, me included, are deeply suspicious of any argument for the kind of climate change that says, okay, it's humans that have done this and what we need is more regulation and tax. Because if you look at who will have the power to control that tax and regulation, they're not leadership at this point that, as far as I'm concerned, are trustworthy. So there are deep questions about what the real game is here. And I think a lot of questions need to be asked and answered, because before we can really come up with a wide consensus on taking action about what's happening with climate and the weather. Of course, number one issue is what is the global spraying program, and is our atmosphere being re-engineered globally? Another video I put up on the blog this week a bit in Wildcards about the global spraying program. Do we have weather warfare? Is weather warfare at play? I believe yes, for many of the reasons we've talked about, but of course, no one knows for sure. And then, of course, this dovetails with the UFO issue, because one of the things that's happening, if carbon emissions have anything to do with it, is we are using fossil fuel in great amounts. We have UFOs flying all over the planet that are clearly using an energy system other than the fossil fuels. If that technology is available and it's so important to lower carbon emissions, why aren't we using it? So the questions, the contradictions are deep, and the questions need to be asked. So my point with the commentary is the unanswered questions of weird weather are getting pervasive. That's a good thing. As the weird weather continues, we need to keep asking those questions. What's going on? The online world continues to go wild. We saw 1 million smartphones shipped last year, the announcement. So there's 1.6 million people online, primarily through phones, and 1 million smartphones shipped last year. That can't continue unless everybody's upgrading, or unless we start bringing, you know, all 8 to 9 billion people into the, you know, onto the phone network to connect. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this blistering speed keeps up. It's not surprising, given the shift of streaming content onto the internet platform with 1.6 million people online. Comcast announced that it's buying Time Warner Cable today. The combined company would have a combined market share today's valuations of about $180 billion. That's still only 30% of Apple's market share, and Apple, of course, continues to make attracting the movie and TV audience onto its platform a priority. Washington's making a big deal regarding the antitrust issues involved, but at the end of the day, it's doubtful that they will be. The cable business is dying. So this is a consolidation within a dying sector. Everyone's merging into one big buggy whip company monopoly. Alipay, which is the payment mechanism for mobile connected to Alibaba, the largest Chinese online store and therefore the largest online store in the world, Alipay announced that its accounts process nearly $150 billion in mobile transactions, putting its mobile payment business volume greater than both PayPal and Square combined. It shows you the enormous clout growing of the Asian online market. Bitcoin, lots of problems this week. We see all sorts of squabbles and headlines. Exchanges blaming Bitcoin, Bitcoin blaming exchange software. Doesn't really matter. You know, the message is the system does not yet have integrity. More on Bitcoin in later Solari reports. Netflix is now 32% of U.S. internet traffic, which has very interesting connotations for the net neutrality debate, which could easily turn into the get Netflix debate. If I was Netflix, it would certainly make me very interested, given the litigation going on and the court decisions in net neutrality. There is clearly stress in the financial system, but as of yet, I don't take it too seriously. Since the beginning of the year, of course, the S&P ended the year very high, up 30% last year. It's corrected down 5 to 6%. We are way overdue for not only a 5 to 6% correction, but way overdue for a 10 to 15 or 15 to 20% correction. Don't be surprised to see that happen. The S&P has now risen back up to 1829, approaching the 1850 line, which it approached and didn't cross in both December and January. So let's see what happens. It's going to be very interesting to see if it runs out of steam here and starts correcting into, again, what's a very normal, natural 10 to 15% correction, even more, or breaks through. We should see relatively soon. To me, it's much more logical that it will break down than up, but we'll see what happens. Interestingly enough, the emerging markets, which were down a lot last year, depending on which market you're in, were down another 5% with the S&P. Lots of screaming from the emerging markets as the tapering by the Fed clearly draws capital out of the emerging markets. This process of drawing the capital back into the developed world continues. Expect to see it continue all year, and that to give really a buying, you know, almost a sales opportunity for American and European companies buying up companies cheap and buying up markets cheap in the emerging markets. I suspect they're kind of licking their chops. It's beginning to look very much like things did in 1997. Here it comes. You've seen stories, and I've posted several of them up on the blog. You can read them on a series of suicides and death, both in the United States and in the UK. In the financial system, bankers, real estate executives, many of them look like likely assassinations to me. The head of a title company is dead from supposedly suicide by shooting himself with a nail gun. I don't think most people commit suicide that way. Anyway, so it looks like assassinations to me. I would not read too much into it in terms of this turning into another 2008. Again, the big liabilities have been extinguished and sort of the financial coup d'etat has been successful. What you're now seeing is various institutions having to manage liabilities through the endless investigations between the bankers and the regulators as to who gets how much money and who holds the bag. So this is sort of knowledge management in a very gruesome way. I don't expect it to stop. I think you're going to see more of this. One of the more interesting sort of covert happenings in the financial system is we see a fire in the Iron Mountain archives in Argentina. Iron Mountain is arguably the leading company globally for archiving banking and other financial institution records. When you see a fire in the Iron Mountain, particularly one that it clearly looks like arson, it says there are real problems. So we have enormous squabbles over the Argentine banking reserves, and voila, suddenly you have an Iron Mountain fire in the Iron Mountain installation in Argentina, 9 people killed. That's a serious fire when people die. So real stress in the Argentine financial situation. Iceland continues to work on a digital currency. Beware the model. It may be wonderful for Iceland. It's not so wonderful applied to the United States. You're talking about a government with a database with every citizen in it with a number, issuing currency with those numbers, and you're talking about the potential for something that could be wonderful in Iceland, but very, very ugly and very centrally controlled here. So Iceland continues to try things that sound wonderful but could be horrible here, not to mention the idea of crowdfunding a new constitution. So great for Iceland, not so wonderful for here. Gold was up, hovering right over the 1300 line at the end of the day. Since the beginning of the year, gold is up 7%. The junior miners are flying up 30%, probably correcting a little bit down now. And that compares to the S&P down about 2% for the year. So the gold bugs are feeling a little bit better. Now, the miners have come down so much last year that it's not surprising to see them jump up. But we'll see what happens. I don't necessarily think this means a whole lot, but it's too early to tell. Let's see what happens. There's certainly enough wobbling going on in the economy globally and slowdown in growth that along with the taper could be good for gold. So let's cross our fingers. Geopolitics. It's just, you gotta love the Swiss. The Swiss have voted to restrict immigration, and of course that's got the EU up in the arms, threatening all sorts of things at the Swiss. The Swiss vote makes a lot of sense. If you look at the capacity of the country to keep taking more immigrants, everybody wants to move to Switzerland. Their capacity to keep taking in that many immigrants is really limited. So it doesn't surprise me. The vote seems perfectly reasonable. And what I would say to everybody else in the European Union, why not make your country as attractive as the Swiss has made theirs? That's the problem. Everybody wants to go to Switzerland because, you know, the Swiss, it's a country where people still take seriously property rights and the rule of law. Obama has done another delay back in the United States of Obamacare. And if you look at the legal basis for making the delays and changes that the administration is making, it's mind-boggling. You know, the whole situation is completely way beyond the law. It's kind of an out-of-control, make-up-the-law-as-you-go basis. The U.S. House and Senate have approved a clean debt limit. We'll see how this works. But it looks like we're certainly fine with a debt limit. And you can see the message from the money behind the throne is we don't want a public political mess, certainly not before the elections in November. So everybody in the House and Senate is trying to keep their dirty laundry under the carpet and sort of get the mechanics of government done. Interestingly enough, we see a real effort developing. We'll see how it evolves to kind of what I call swarm Dick Cheney. We have a new article out in The Nation and a variety of other publications called Dick Cheney's Dark Legacy. It's his world. We're just living in it. And we have a new documentary, The World According to Dick Cheney, on Showtime. It's running, I think, 2 or 3 times a week for the rest of February. And some other articles, one about Dick Cheney shooting somebody in the face when he was vice president. On and on and on. It's kind of get Dick Cheney, and it's almost as though the system is waiting to see if it can sort of feed Dick Cheney to the crowd and blame him for a whole lot of stuff that's gone on. You know, the theory is, well, Dick Cheney made us do it. It's all a bunch of buck because if we wanted to just undo it, we could. All these terrible things that Dick Cheney did continue. And I think, if anything, these things are being insisted on by the meta structure. But there's clearly something going on, and the question is, will Dick Cheney be the, you know, take the fall for a lot of the evil doing? Let's see. The post office has a huge, large ammo purchase that's got everybody wondering what's going on. no way to tell, but you wonder what it is over the next year that's got the post office so afraid for security. Although they could just be buying it, it could be for a variety of different purposes in government, including to soak up the ammo so people can't buy it. I normally don't talk about celebrity kind of behavior, but Michelle Obama, I did something unusual. I put up a tweet that Michelle Obama put out this week. It's a tweet. It shows her two dogs sitting at a table, beautifully decorated, as though they were going to have dinner on fine china. And her message was bon appetit. And I must say it was one of the most insensitive tweets I can imagine for the first lady to put out, given how people are suffering in this economy. And given the importance of the election in November, it shows an incredible disassociation by the first lady from what's really going on in the country politically. And it almost makes you scratch your head and say, you know, the bubble in Washington is getting very profound. One way to underscore it is another post I put up that showed latest statistics show that the average bureaucrat in Washington makes $75,000 a year compared to the median U.S. income, which is $42,000. So we're watching the bureaucracy in Washington paid almost double what the U.S. taxpayer is paid. And of course, that's what happens when the powers that be pay people an extraordinary amount of money to do things that are outside the best interests of the American people and certainly the spirit of the law. To give you a sense of how bipartisan this is, James Carville has joined Fox News. I mean, that kind of says it all. The Snowden Files put out a paper on how British spies use sex and dirty tricks. It was kind of a laundry list of covert operations. I sent it to somebody who had dealt with a lot of the same kinds of dirty tricks during my litigation. They wrote back and said, oh, surprise, surprise. But it's a pretty interesting little laundry list. That's up on the blog if you're interested. Finally, the U.S. and Europe announced it wants less U.S. power over the internet. No kidding. A couple other stories I wanted to point out, too, interesting in the business sector. There was a very good overall piece on the railroad industry, which really is going through a second rail boom. It was in Forbes, very good overview, and that's up in a commentary on the blog. And then a very interesting development, 10 big drug companies unite to study major diseases together. It's kind of interesting. It shows you how expensive the research process is and how consolidated the drug business is getting. But I thought it was pretty interesting since traditionally they have not cooperated but competed. Our hero this week, we have two. One is Jenny Barker, story up in Life, a woman who, in the UK, who ran into a homeless man on the streets who explained he just wanted to go back to Jamaica. And so she started a crowdfunding campaign and has raised enough money so that he can return to Jamaica with some money in his pocket. Great idea, great thing to do. And Lynn Stewart, a wonderful attorney who has been an activist for many years, who did an interview with Chris Hedges, and it does a very good job of explaining really the collapse of our legal system. A little bit of a depressing topic, but very worth hearing. Ask Catherine. Catherine, I was wondering if you could help me with the issue of fingerprint sensors and smartphones. My daughter's iPhone was stolen, and she's decided to replace her previous model that is no longer available with the memory she needs by the latest iPhone that has a fingerprint sensor. Although this is not the feature she is primarily drawn to, she is very keen on using it for speed of access. We're having an ongoing discussion on the potential negative implications, and she is open to any information, providing it is not such a good idea. I recall you begging your listeners not to give their fingerprints in one of the latest Solari reports. Could you please elaborate and or point me to a useful article on the website? We have found two articles that I think do a reasonably good job of explaining some of the dangers, and we have posted them up in the subscriber link section. So I hope that helps, and thank you for that question. That's a good thing for people to kind of think about. Franklin Sanders is really an incredible scholar of American history. Would you consider doing an interview with him on subjects like the history of central banking, the erosion of our constitutional rights, and the real underlying reasons behind the Civil War? You're in luck. We did something that very much covers those topics in the archives. Franklin and I did a series called The Top 10 Dates of Gold and Silver in American History, and then put it all together in a book, so it's in transcript form as well. And I strongly recommend that you take a look for that in the Precious Metals Library. It's there. As Franklin joins us, he'll be joining us quarterly this year. I'll look for opportunities to do some of these historical topics. And I hope you listened to the interview we did last night. It's a very important topic. Many of you may think, well, you know, what does it have to do with me with people in jail? Well, if you look at what the enforcement model is in this country and who's ending up in jail, this is something we need to reverse engineer now. You know, this is a model that could end up literally eating us all up alive. Question G, in geoengineering, is it accurate? Referring to a video I put up on geoengineering. Well, it's a long video, so accurate. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of statements in it, so I don't want to bore you and go through the whole thing statement by statement. But on the Solari Report, we did a series on global spraying. I did an introduction. I think I called it Chemtrails. We'll put links up in the subscriber links. And then I did an interview with Clifford Conracom, and then by enormous request by the subscribers, we had him back for a two-hour special. We did a transcript for it, and I would really encourage you to listen to that two-hour special with Clifford and the transcript. It's a great thing. We've also made Michael Murphy's, we've reviewed both of his documentaries, and his last documentary on the chemtrails process was, not 2013, but the year before, was one of the documentaries that won Solari Documentary of the Year. So I would strongly recommend you watch those, as well as Clifford's aerosol crimes. You know, so we've done some great stuff on global spraying. Is it true? Is it happening? Yes. Why? How does it work? What's really going on? There are many more questions, and we keep asking those questions. Clifford, in the two-hour special, laid out all the possible reasons that this might be happening. And in my experience, when something is that expensive, it's never one goal. There's always a multivariate equation of goals. As I said, our interview with Franklin was very interesting. What is happening, particularly in the rural communities of America with incarceration, is pretty frightening. The United States essentially has the highest documented incarceration rate in the world. And I would say the majority of those people were incarcerated for nonviolent crimes, particularly because of the war on drugs. In Let's Go to the Movies tonight, our movie is The House I Live In, which is one of the best recent documentaries on the war on drugs, and it really helps you understand the explosive growth in the U.S. prison complex. If you read my story, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, you'll sort of understand why I say that there are many, many people in prison today who are railroaded in for relatively minor crimes or for nothing at all. And if you look at who is guilty of serious crimes in this country, particularly those that really harm people, I would say most of the really powerful and effective criminals are roaming free. But as I said, I think the model of the prison model in this country has turned into something which is really the Nazi model done on a free-range basis and made much more profitable. If you look at the numbers in Dylan Reed, I show you why I say that the for every prisoner in a prison, you have 10 American taxpayers in a tax prison. If you look at the costs, this is a very uneconomic model for the U.S. government. In 1996, the General Accounting Office estimated that each prisoner each year cost upwards of $154,000 a year. That's including all the capital costs. So this is a highly uneconomic model. Well, that's it for this evening. In closing, let's talk about what's coming up. The interview with Richard Dolan will be posted next week on his new book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. Outstanding book, outstanding interview. I hope you enjoy it. On February 27th, my first part of The Breakaway Economy, and then March 6th, my second part of The Breakaway Economy. We've got some great stuff in the process of being scheduled for March. So March is going to be a very good month on the Solari Report. But The Breakaway Economy, Part 1 and Part 2, I think will help those of you who read the wrap-up but aren't interested in drilling down and seeing where the strength in the economy is going to be over the next year or two, particularly in North America. So until February 20th with Richard Dolan, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.